Good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Ewan Spence here once more on your All About Windows Phone Insight podcast. Joining us, we have two respected experts, and Steve is going to try and not be too nasty about Windows Phone. Okay, Steve?
I'll do my best.
So, Steve Litchfield is microphone number one. Welcome, Steve.
Yes, I hope I come across loud and clear. I've been to the dentist and half my mouth is completely numb, but let's see how we go.
Comfortably numb? Everybody else is running to Wikipedia going, I don't get that one. But anyway, we also have David Gilson.
Hello, yes. And it's funny how the title of the Windows Phone bad guy has passed from me to Steve. I'm wondering whether it's going to be Ewan or Rafe next.
No. What it is, David, is basically, it's like you're Barnsley and all of a sudden you're playing... Well, actually, no. So we have some American listeners. It's like you're Detroit and all of a sudden you're playing the Yankees. Everybody is rooting for the Tigers just this once.
Is that saying that everybody is that saying that we like an underdog sometimes?
No, it's basically saying that you're like the New York Yankees.
I think we're straying from the podcast theme here.
All right then, okay. We have Mr. Fast and Furious himself, Rafe Blanford.
Thank you, Ewan. Yes, I'm here too. We've been getting lots of feedback on the podcast, including some comments that we've got varying personalities and that Steve is too much of a phone or a Symbian lover and that Ewan and I are too nice about Windows Phone and David's a Linux fanboy. And maybe we play up those personalities a bit, but I always think it's good to have a spectrum of opinion. But talking of feedback, I'm always very pleased to get that. So thank you to all of you that have sent some comments in or seen me face to face. I was at the Windows Phone user group, the kind of developer meet that happens in London once a month, and it was great to get some direct feedback there as well. And that's a great event to attend, by the way. They've got some Windows Phone 8 stuff coming up in the next 2 months, so go and check that out. Just type WPUG into Google and you'll find the site. It's also on Twitter and everywhere else. But Ewan, can you actually say something nasty about Windows Phone just to keep, you know, balance?
Oh, right. Okay. Now, to bring balance to your operating systems, well, I could be really like picky and say something nasty that's not actually quite nasty, which is I'd really like a live tile for the battery saver to go on so I could have a live tile functionality for one of the settings. But that's probably welching just a little bit. And I'm more a Hank Marvin kind of guy. So it's the file system. The fact that you do not have USB mass storage, you know, I know it's got a fancy file system at the back end and everything, but I see no reasons why when you plug the USB in, you can't have a little client program that just sits there and goes, if it's music, I'll put it in this virtual folder. If it's a picture, I'll put it in this virtual folder. If it's video, I'll put it in this virtual folder. It's probably the most maddening thing. Steve, I know, is macked up and has to use the Windows client that comes with that one. And it's, you know, I have to do that as well. Yes, I've got a Mac now. and yeah, I've still got Windows though, so don't you go running away too hard with it. Just the idea that you just plug it in and just see what's going on, really, you know, it's not going to be noticed by the beginners. The clients would still work and everything, but let's just actually see the ones and zeros at some basic level. Even the iPhone, which doesn't let you into the main file system, has the DCIM folder for the images so you can get the pictures off whenever you can find a USB socket. It's not a brilliant answer, but it's an answer. What Windows Phone has done is they've just went on Mastermind and said, pass.
So Ewan's, in other words, coming up with something that may well be fixed in Windows Phone 8 so he can start liking it again.
Sneaky.
I don't think that was that. I don't think it was that nasty. Actually,
the thing that really annoys me is the fact it's called Windows Phone, because I actually think it's a lot more than a phone. And every time you write down Windows Phone,
you can't say
a Windows Phone phone. You have to say a Windows Phone handset or a Windows Phone device. And sometimes that can be a little irritating, especially when you're writing in some languages and you do quite often see Windows Phone phone or a broadly equivalent, especially in machine translations. But actually, to be more picky about something realistic, I still don't think there's enough background or multitasking functionality. Again, this is something that's going to be improved in Windows Phone 8. You know, we've got the GPS stuff coming in. But despite being told that, you know, people only do one thing at a time on a phone, you don't really need multitasking. We see this on all the platforms. Having used a Symbian device for so long, it is something that still really annoys me. And I don't think it's going to get perfectly fixed in the next version or even the version after that, mainly because, you know, the experience or the common experience that most people want on phones doesn't seem to revolve around multitasking. But I guess we'll have lots of positive things to talk about. But I guess we should probably talk about really some negative news first, Ewan.
I know. I think we should turn the tables here. You ready for this?
Okay.
Steve, say something nice about Windows Phone.
Well... I've been using the Lumia 710 on and off now for 2 weeks, desperately trying to do everything I normally do, and you know, on the whole, most of the things I have been able to do, I've often said on my other podcast that Windows Phone is 90% there, and again I've hit the 90% point and I'm hitting showstoppers, but that 90% went really, really well, and I'm still optimistic that this Windows Phone 8, and I've been sitting here running down list of about 20 bullet points, all the different things Windows Phone 8 is going to bring. And, you know, I think they can actually close that last 10% for me. And I'm really, really looking forward to the 920 in particular, not only testing that camera, but I think they can close the gap and tick off everything on my list.
Steve, just a point of interest, on that not to 100 scale, where would you place, say, Symbian, Android and iOS?
Well, Symbian, by definition, I think would have to be somewhere around the 98%, because I've been with it so long, I know everything there is to know, and I know it can actually cope with everything I want to do, because everything I want to do is, by definition, what Symbian does. That's where I've come from. Android, I would say, is up to about 95% again. Nothing quite gets to 100%, because there's always something each operating system leaves me wanting more from. And that's as it should be. All the time I'm trying different devices, different platforms, hoping to find the one perfect device, the one perfect platform, and then the search can stop. But then, of course, I'd be out of a job and you'd be out of a job and we'd all be off down the beach.
Hey, David, do you want to have a go at saying something nice?
Just in general, like, it's for tiles. That is a really unique approach. So, as soon as they brought in proper live tiles with Manga, they went beyond being big icons. Some people might say with Windows Phone 8, they've reinvented the icon with the quad size. But yeah, the tiles are original, rather than just having like grids of icons and like strange widget-type things floating, non-standard widgets floating around. I love the tile system. I mean, it gives you glanceable information.
There we go. See, look, it's taken us a while, but we've got to a point where we now have balance. And Windows Phone as a whole has taken a long time to get to the point where it is now. You know, we have the vanguard, the first guard in ourselves, and all the Windows Phone 7.5 handsets. We have also the vanguard of the manufacturers as well. They've had, you know, interesting roads to get here. Samsung, we've already mentioned, going with the Galaxies. You have HTC coming through. But Rafe, I want to look at, just for the start here, on Nokia. Their Q3 results have just been announced. And, you know, really, Nokia are the standard bearers for Windows Phone, certainly in Europe. A slightly different view in America with HTC. But how do we say? A courageous set of Q3 results?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, Nokia's always going to get a lot of attention because it's basically said it's Windows Phone or bust. And it obviously had the big shift from Symbian, so it created a lot of noise. And, you know, it's still the number two mobile phone manufacturer, and the smartphone shipments have gone right down, of which more in a moment. But it is kind of the big beast in the Windows Phone room. It's, you know, it's not doing Android devices like HTC. And obviously Samsung is almost entirely Android and then does some other stuff as well. And HTC is maybe a more even split, but it is more on Android. So inevitably a lot of attention gets focused on Nokia. Frankly, there is more to talk about. They're doing more in the way of custom apps, more in the way of promotions. I think the devices are arguably more interesting in a lot of ways in terms of some of the innovation. But yeah, looking at these Q3 results, I mean, kind of as expected, you know, the headline numbers aren't very good. It's a operating loss of 576 million euros. The net sales are down slightly year on year. Well, actually down 19%. So that's quite a bit. The kind of the crucial devices and services division, that's the ones that sell the phones, is, you know, had a loss of 683 million. And then the margins, that's kind of the measure of the profitability in device and services, was at minus 20% effectively, and that's down a bit from last year, and you know, down again from the previous quarter. And then the sort of the numbers that have been attracting a lot of attention are the fact they only sold 6.3 million smartphones. Of those, 2.9 million were Lumia devices. Now that's down from 4 million the previous quarter. And, you know, there's a lot of attention. Is this kind of starting to crack and crash? You know, the obvious immediate response on the Windows Phone side is that it's ahead of Windows Phone 8, so you'd kind of expect the sales to slow down a bit. But I think it's fair to say they've slowed down more than people were expecting. I mean, the analyst projections were for higher than that. You know, yeah, you have to take them with a pinch of salt, but they were sort of around the 3.5 million mark. So it's definitely under-delivered in that sense. Well, maybe come back and talk about numbers as well. But as I say, 2.9 million Lumia devices. I'm pretty sure Steve is going to say something about Symbian devices right now, because you can do some basic maths, can't you?
Yes, indeed. I have got my calculator here. Not that I need a calculator to do 6.3 minus 2.9, but basically 3.4 million cells are unaccounted for. And I'm guessing, Rafe, that the majority of those are Symbian and not Miga or something strange, which means that 18 months after Microsoft and Nokia shook hands and Nokia said, that's it, we're going to axe Symbian and we're going to all end Windows Phone, Symbian is still outselling Windows Phone. Now, obviously, this is temporary because Symbian is still on the way down and Windows Phone, we hope, is going to take a big upturn, but it's still kind of significant that Symbian hasn't gone away, and maybe Nokia should really not have killed it quite so much as they did last year.
Yeah, I mean, this is the debate that's going to run and run and run. I take the view it's not all that significant, because if you look at the sort of numbers over time, actually the pattern is Symbian dropping heavily by about the same amount each month. And what's happened this month is you've got Windows Phone 8 coming, and so the Windows Phone 7.5 device sales have stalled. Now, honestly, I was a bit surprised it was as low as it was, but it's maybe a reflection of kind of inventory sitting in the chain. So, you know, Nokia has a whole bunch of Windows Phone 7.5 devices. At least some of them probably aren't going to sell so well afterwards. I think particularly you might look at the 710 and the 800 in that respect. But also I think it's down to the fact that I've described it as an incumbency effect for Symbian. You know, there's a whole bunch of products out there. Obviously, we've had the 808, so that's given a bit of a boost. But actually, it's mainly about some of the older products, particularly at the lower end. But also, you know, the sort of middle tier ones like the 701 or maybe something like the 603. You know, they're a well-known quantity. Operators know what they are. And while they've disappeared from Western markets, they are actually still for sale in, you know, a lot of other markets, you know, out in Asia, also in Africa. And, you know, in some places in Europe, they're still, you know, selling reasonably well. I think, you know, about 5% of smartphone sales in Italy are a Symbian device, and that compares to the UK where it's 0.5% or something like that. So it's not that Symbian is, you know, doing really, really well. It's just it takes a while for you to switch one over to the other. And more to the point, of course, is that the Symbian devices are actually spread over a broader price range than the Windows Phone devices. Yes, I mean, I actually do think it's kind of an interesting point. I'm sure this one's going to be brought up a lot. The gap between them is actually narrowed. This is the smallest gap this quarter that we've had, and it looks pretty obvious now that in Q4 we'll have the switchover happen. And I think it's kind of interesting that that's exactly 2 years, well, not exactly 2 years, but, you know, 2 years near enough from, you know, the point that the strategy change. And if you think about how long, you know, product life cycles are for, you know, smartphones and how long devices take to develop, actually I think that makes a certain amount of sense. I mean, I, you know, people have asked me, do I think that the Windows Phone sales could have been better for Nokia? Yes, they could have been, and I think the projections both externally and internally were probably higher, but not by as much as, you know, people might imagine. You know, there's all the arguments around this, you know, come back to the same sort of thing. You should have sold more of the abandoning of Windows 7.5, and by that people mean you can't upgrade it to Windows Phone 8. And then other people say, oh, but they sold similar numbers to Android and iPhone as they did in their kind of first period. You know, you could say this drop off with the Windows 7.5 devices, something very similar happened with iPhone when its kind of next generation came along the first time, and you can actually see it in all the charts. There's a dip. I think that's a slightly weak argument myself, and I was, as I say, surprised that it was this low. And all the attention's focused on this, and I actually think obsession with just looking at the units is probably a mistake. I mean, David, you were chatting to me the other day about the Asha devices. And, you know, how do you define those as smartphones? Because that's kind of an interesting bit in the results from those.
Absolutely. If you look at the chart in the article, well, if for people who are listening, look at the chart that you put in the article that you wrote, it's interesting that you can see Symbian sales just dive down as soon as the February 11th announcement was made. And then as you stack on top the Windows Phone sales, they grew up to Q2 last year. Sorry, this year. And then they've been declining slightly. But then as soon as you see the full Asher Touch phones come on, they have really exploded compared to anything else that Nokia are doing. And they've, just qualitatively looking at that chart, they've put Nokia's sales back to where it was a year ago. So, and yes, the Asher phones are not, strictly speaking, smartphones in the way that we think about them, but they are becoming more and more smartphone-like. They can do more and more things. And you have to wonder how much more would it take for them to be useful to the technorati, perhaps, if ever. But it does make you wonder if this is maybe where Nokia's future lies. I mean, especially because, I mean, there's odd rumours that Microsoft may make its own phone, and Steve Elop said in the earnings call that he thinks that would be a good thing, and really, what else could he say? So you begin to wonder, looking at that chart, I mean, Symbian is going to die off. I mean, I wrote last week, and it's been picked up on quite a lot of sites, that Symbian is now in maintenance mode, which is going to leave them a Windows phone and Asher. And it makes you wonder whether the Asher is going to be the main thing that they are selling, mostly in developing markets, and that the Windows phone smartphones is going to be something more of a sideline. I think that is a possible future.
I think that's maybe an over-exaggeration, but it's quite clear that the mobile phone business is still very important to Nokia. It's, you know, one of the bright spots. And if you look at the overall results for mobile phones, they're really quite encouraging indeed. I mean, this Asher smartphone definition thing is interesting. I think you probably have to restrict it to the Asher full touch device. And even that's controversial. You know, you've had a couple of the analyst firms saying, yes, they are smartphones, others saying they're not. I'm personally reluctant to call them smartphones, but I would call them, you know, devices with a smart experience. And, you know, you get maps, you get music, all the things you kind of associate with a smartphone on there. And for me, the most important thing is they directly compete against, you know, the cheap Android devices. So effectively, you know, they are smartphones in people's pockets and they're competing directly against them. And honestly, I think a lot of the low-end Symbian sales have been replaced by these Asher full-touch devices. You know, rather than buy something like a 5222, people are buying something like the Asher 311. And so, you know, saying that they are a replacement, I don't think is entirely unfair to say that. Now, I actually think Windows Phone is going to come back in a big way with Windows Phone 8, and obviously this is what Nokia's betting on. So, as I say, I don't think it's too important to get bogged down in one quarter's numbers. It'll be really interesting to see what happens going into 2013. I actually think Q4 we won't get a full picture because they'll be launching sort of halfway through the quarter, and it's going to take a while for them to ramp up. But obviously they need to reverse this trend. They need to grow the numbers again, go, you know, 5 million, 10 million, whatever. But the other thing with all of this, one thing I want to comment on is actually the underlying financials at Nokia are much healthier this quarter than they have been for a while. And that's actually reflected in kind of the stock market reaction where the share price went up a bit. It's kind of stabilized a bit now. But probably the figure that's easiest to explain to people is that the non-IFRS operating profit, so actually made a profit, was 78 million euros. That compares to the operating loss I talked about at the beginning, which is minus 576 million. So what is this non-IFRS profit figure? Well, that's basically taking out all the operating expenditures and costs that are one-off and just looking at underlying performance, i.e. what it would be like if you weren't writing off things. And when I say writing off, that's, you know, costs associated with restructuring device and services, you know, the job loss that have been going on, for example, or writing down the value of an acquisition and things like that. So they're kind of one-off. It's not the, you know, day-to-day costs of doing business, if you will. And so that's, I think, a pretty encouraging sign. And that's, you know, a lot of the shareholders will be going, that's a good job done on, you know, cutting operating expenditure and various other bits and pieces, you know, good management. You know, people who are just looking at the smartphone shipment numbers won't see any of that. And you can also see this in kind of the cash pile that Nokia has. Yes, it's gone down again. That's what happens when you make an operating loss. But it didn't go down as much as was expected. And looking at some of the way they structured that cash that remains as well, it's quite available. It's easy to use, and it was less than market expectations. So all of that actually point towards Nokia being in a much better financial position as it sort of moves into 2013. And one of our commenters on the site said, you know, have they front-loaded all of the kind of the bad news in these earnings? Well, obviously there's legal requirements here for all of this, but yes, I think probably Stephen Enop and his team have taken the decision to try and, you know, do some of the bad news in 2012, and that's why some of the job losses happened in the summer, where they might have been put off a bit longer. And it'll be really interesting to see what the figures are into 2013. So kind of the headlines of this are really bad, and there's, you know, a lot of comment on not selling very many devices, but the underlying kind of financial numbers are really quite positive compared to what happened in Q1, Q2 and in 2011. So I kind of conclude the article by saying, as far as I'm concerned, the worst is over for Nokia in this transition in financial terms, but there is an awful lot riding on Windows Phone 8 now. You know, it really depends what happens there, and I think it's still very hard to predict that. And that's kind of reflected in the outlook which Nokia gave, which was actually relatively optimistic, but they said devices and service operating margin in Q4 will get to -6%. If they do that, that will be a considerable achievement, but they did say it has a range of ±4%, so we'll have to wait and see on that one.
And that's why we didn't ask Rafe to say something nice earlier. So there we go. Let's move on to something a little bit more personal now. And one of the most personal things about your smartphone, which I've argued for countless times before, is music. And we have had the announcement this week of the Xbox Music Service package, everything that goes for Windows 8, Windows Phone 8, Windows RT, Surface Pro, Xbox 360s as well. It's essentially Microsoft's answer to all the different music services that are out there, such as Pandora, Last.fm, Spotify, RDIO, a huge bundle of stuff down here, four main elements coming through. But before we do that, let's just set the scene very slightly. Before this point, you had the Zune Music Pass, and that gave you, as well as you could buy individual tracks as well, obviously, $8.99 in the UK. You could download as many tracks as you liked. They were DRM'd up. And you could also stream individual tracks either on the Zune PC client or on the Windows Phone handset. Rafe is probably going to question me on this one because I seem to be taking the lead on this one rather than him, but the Xbox Music Service, four different parts to this one. You can stream your music, such as you do with Spotify. There will be a little bit of advertising in there in between the tracks as well. You have the rebrand of the elements of the Zune Music Pass, so you can have your subscription service download music and listen to that as much as you can. You still have the music store where you can buy or stream individual tracks. Again, those are getting relabeled to Xbox Music Store and Xbox Music Pass, so basically Zune becomes Xbox. And you also have Smart DJ, and that takes on the elements of things like Last.fm and Pandora as well, where you say, play me stuff that I should like, and it will make a best guess for you. Rafe, I just think this is a wonderful deal all round. It is one of the most comprehensive music services in Web 2.0, full stop. I can't see any other service or package or industry out there that's delivering as much as Xbox Music is.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty compelling offer. I think there are a few missing elements. I mean, but Microsoft has said they're coming soon. I mean, just to speak to these in particular, there is no streaming on Windows Phone at the moment, but it looks like that's going to come. There's also the kind of scan and match service. That's the same as you get with iTunes and with Amazon Cloud Player, that you can take your current collection and kind of put it into the Zune. Sorry, I should say the Xbox Music Service. I have to get the branding right there. And there's some social elements coming as well. But the thing that catches my eye most about this is kind of the integration between the various Windows platforms and Xbox as well. And this works, there's basically a cloud backend. And so it is your music collection, but it's also your playlists and even what you're playing at the moment. So you can pause on one device and then start playing on another, and that's part of Smart Glass. Now, the interesting thing is this kind of comes in tiers, and it does depend what's available in your market. And there are, I think, 15 markets where you get the streaming, 22 where you get the pass and the store. If you don't have it, it'll kind of just operate as a dumb music player, if you like, and you can load on music as you will. And then there's kind of the next step up is to have the free elements where you get the streaming, and something like Smart DJ will then rely on kind of what's in your personal music collection, i.e. stuff you put on the phone or stuff that you bought. And you will get a certain amount of intelligence with this, you know, cloud backend, you know, stuff that you've bought. And then later on with Scan and Match, that will come in as well, and playlists. And you kind of get the full version if you pay for, as you say, the Xbox Music Pass, $10. And that's where I think the kind of cloud integration will really come in, because, you know, you will get the playlist between devices, you know, the starting, the pausing with that smart glass functionality. But actually, the kind of critical thing is it's got the three ways that people tend to listen to music on digital devices, you know, the loading on yourself or buying a la carte from the store, that works fine. You've got the kind of free music streaming Spotify style where you choose what you want to listen to, either, you know, specify a track or an artist and it goes away. And that's ad supported. Microsoft have been quite canny here. They're giving it away unlimited for the first 6 months, but after that, you'll only then get 10 hours a month. It will go unlimited, obviously, if you get a Xbox Music Pass. But there's also the kind of the smart DJ stuff, which does give this Last.fm or Pandora-like experience. And obviously, where you've got the music streaming, it will use that plus your own music library. So I think combining all those together, it, you know, Microsoft actually describes this, you wouldn't have to hop between services. So you wouldn't have to use Spotify sometimes and then, you know, iTunes for something else or Amazon. So, yeah, I do think this is a pretty compelling offering. Of course, the big caveat to this is, you're within the Windows ecosystem and some people won't like that. But I did think it was really interesting they announced that coming sometime next year would be iOS and Android versions. If you do that, you then covered an awful lot of users. And, you know, in just the same way that, you know, Apple had to do iTunes on Windows, but they never quite got to the point where it had, you know, the iTunes experience on Windows Phone or Android. And, you know, the same applies to the, you know, Google Cloud Play or the Google Music. So it'll be really interesting to see how that plays out and whether we'll start to see more of this services from, you know, the big three or the big four, depending on how you define them, crossing over onto each other. But for, you know, for me, Xbox Music, you know, being able to have it on your tablet, your PC, your phone and your Xbox, yeah, that's a pretty compelling offering. Would I pay you know, the £8 a month? I'm certainly far more tempted to than I was with Zune. And I imagine you'll be continuing your pass. But I guess, David and Steve, we'll start with David. Would you look at Xbox Music as something that's more attractive than your current kind of music services and experience?
Well, I think I'd probably be a hard sell to any music executives, because it's there are long gaps between when there's any music that I actually want to buy and that I'm actually excited about. But I mean, even the subscription, with all the added services you do get on top of the subscription, and given that it's below the £9 a month mark, I would start to think about it just as a convenience thing. And especially if they're going to release clients on all the mobile platforms, because people like us have got a little bit of everything. So we want to take our music and our documents and everything, and books with us, whatever device we're using. I'm very interested in the smart DJ thing, which you can get anyway, because I've really enjoyed using smart playlists with Zoom when I've been syncing music to my Lumia. It's really impressed me, and to me, I've got an iPhone at the moment. I'm using an iPhone and I've got iTunes, and I've actually found the Zoom smart playlists easier to set up and easier to get going with than the iTunes Genius. Which I was actually looking forward to trying iTunes Genius, having tried Zune. And actually, I think Zune is easy to set up, so I really want to use that. So as long as we are going to be ubiquitous and be everywhere, so you can take your stuff with you without having to use the devices that Microsoft tell you to use, yeah, I'm feeling positive about this.
And how about you, Steve? I know you've sort of quite eclectic music taste, but you know, you like your music, but maybe a traditional CD purchaser. Is this something that would interest you, especially if they get, as Dave was talking about, some of the cross-platform and the scan and match, so you can have a complete cloud experience on any device, whether it's tablet or PC or Mac or, you know, your Windows Phone device?
I guess the best I can say is that this all seems very competitive. I mean, I look at as you people know, I've got a foot in every single mobile camp in terms of what I cover and write about and broadcast about. And whether you go with Apple or Microsoft or Google or indeed Amazon, they all have roughly similar economics. And for once, Microsoft isn't pricing this out of the right ballpark. It's putting it in the right ballpark. And basically is very, very competitive. Yes, I am a very traditional music buyer. I love buying CDs because it I buy them directly from the artist if possible, because they're, as you say, rather eclectic tastes. I can do that. And I love supporting them. And I love being able to then have the absolute highest music quality on any device by simply ripping the music, the bitrate I choose, and putting it straight on the device. Whereas all of these streaming services, all of these music buying services, they all have some compromises in terms of absolute music quality. And that just grates. But yes, I've certainly bought tracks on an ad hoc basis from all the different music stores, Amazon, Nokia Music Store, and I suspect I'll be doing so from the Microsoft one as well. So put me down as a part-time buyer.
Yeah, well, I think this is the interesting point about this, and talking about quality, it's going to be 196 kilobits per second on the streaming and 256 kilobits per second when you're buying the tracks. And I think this is the point that Microsoft have made. It is competitive with what else is out there and is a complete offering. Now, I did say right at the beginning, there are some more bits to come, so I actually think it'll be maybe better in 6 months' time, but I can certainly see myself starting to use this. And as I was pretty sceptical about Zoom the first time around, and I've been using Amazon to buy my music and have that as Amazon Cloud Player, but I've had to do the manually copying across because that's not available on Windows Phone yet. It's apparently it's in development and it's on the way. But I do like the idea of it working seamlessly across all devices. I know you're a big fan of Zune and have been for a long time, but presumably you feel that Xbox Music is a worthy replacement.
Well, they've changed the name. an Xbox Music Pass scores more in Scrabble than Zune Music Pass. So in that sense, it's an improvement, and congratulations. It's just more of the same. And The only thing that's upset me really has been a slight miscommunication. Microsoft says, look, oh, we've got Xbox Music Pass and it's not going backwards. And everybody thought they were just leaving behind Zune and Windows 7. When in actual fact, what they were doing was everything that you had before is still available on the Xbox Music Pass. And the rest of the Xbox Music service is extra stuff on top. Now, how this actually plays together, say, for example, if you have a Windows 7 or Windows Vista or older laptop, but you get a Windows Phone 8, you know, are you going to be using the Xbox Music Player, the Zune Music Player, Windows Media Player? How are these all going to sort of tie in and interface each other? That is going to be interesting and something that I'm going to take a very careful and close eye on. But yeah, I mean, the thing is, I have buy-in. I have the Zune HD, I have the Windows Phone devices, I have a Windows laptop. You know, I'm the target market for the ecosystem. You know, they don't have a great choice of East European pump funk Latino crossovers, but there's enough there that keeps me happy. In Culto, actually, they're an Xbox Music. So congratulations on that one. We've covered some really big issues there, guys. But we're not quite at the point where I ask for your app of the week, though, because, as Rafe has pointed out, we have been getting a fair bit of feedback coming through on the podcast. And some of that feedback has been in the form of a question. Unfortunately, none of it from Alex Trebek, which would be exciting. But we do have some questions coming in. Let's take some of them just now. If we had the musical rights, we would now play the theme tune to Mastermind. But instead, I shall ask Steve to whistle it on the count of three. One, two, three.
Oh, that's enough of that.
Yeah, that's enough. Right, Steve, you can take the first question for that one. From Paul, which came over by email. This is going to be for everybody, actually. I'm interested to know what features you and the team are most looking forward to in Windows Phone 8, or one that there isn't that you would like to see. Steve, do you want to start off with this one? Just give us one answer, okay? Because otherwise, you'll steal David's answer and Rafe's answer, my answer, and I'll have to start calling you Doogie.
Yes, asking me what features aren't in Windows Phone that I'd like to see is quite a long list, but I'll kick off with one that what echoes what you said earlier in the podcast in terms of file systems, which sounds very boring, but I would like to see SD card support, and I believe this is coming. It remains to be seen exactly how much access you've got as a user to a micro SD that you might pop in, but I'm absolutely, completely, utterly cheesed off with Windows Phone devices that come through my hands, and they've got 8 gigabytes, or in some cases 4 gigabytes. I'm looking at you, Samsung. And sometimes 16 gig, still not enough. But quite often, I want to put a decent chunk of my music, a decent chunk of my videos, and have plenty of room for podcasts, plenty of room for capturing photos and videos, and I just fill the device up. And I'm sorry, 16 gigabytes used to be a lot in 1989. It's not anymore. This is 2012, and I want more. So I want micro SD support and nice and open. Thank you very much.
Lovely. What are you looking forward to? Because it was a two-part question.
Ah, yes. What am I most looking forward to? Well, I guess I should say micro SD support, because I know it's coming. I've botched it twice. Sorry.
Yeah, all right. Okay, I'll
David.
Yeah, David. Oh, my God. I've lost my ruler's question master now. David.
Okay, I'll take the looking forward to a bit first. It's the screenshot feature, because this is the lament of the blogger and the journalist with Windows Phone. It's been so tricky, because you had to have a device that was set up with Chevron, and then once Chevron went away, you had to make sure that you never synced that device ever again in case you lost the unlock, and it has been a complete pain. And now screenshots are going to be built into every device. It's going to be a standard, blessed, official, natural feature, and I'm going to use it lots and lots and lots. The feature that isn't in Windows Phone, but I think should be there, is that I want to be able to configure the search application. Because the Bing search app has got great features like the music and the visual matching, but then there's the web search. And I want to be able to configure the web search to look from different sources other than Bing. I want to be able to search Google, Wikipedia, Wolfram Alpha, and I want those to be easy to get options, even if I just have to, say, long press the magnify. Once I press the magnifying touch button and then I get the four icon toolbar, I want to long press the magnifying glass there and change my search provider.
I've just thought of something else, guys. I meant to say this. Nobody else will understand this acronym, but I want to see OMTP headset support. I believe this is coming, because we heard this in the Q&A with the Nokia Luma 820 product manager Q&A, and he mentioned, he just let slip, that the new devices would support not only the AHJ, which is this like iPhone, Android, American headphone jack headphone support, but they'd also support the older, i.e. Symbian, stroke Mego, all sort of Nokia devices for the last decade, which all use what's called OMTP. I don't know what that stands for, but it's basically the old headphone standard for multimedia control, so you can, you know, skip around a track, you can stop, pause, and so forth. And I'm very much looking forward to that. So hopefully that will be in not only the 820 and 920, would also be in all of the Windows Phone 8 platform handsets.
Well, we've got the first two letters, haven't we? We've got OMTP's old media. Rafe, have you got the other two?
Well, I've got some bad news to see. This is actually a manufacturer-specific feature. They get to decide what sort of head jack to put in. Now, as far as I'm aware, Windows Phone specified that it should be the AHJ, which is the American head jack. And actually, most people in Europe are used to using OMTP. That actually stands for Open Mobile Terminal Platform. It's kind of a forum where network operators get together to discuss standards and manufacturers as well. And they do a whole bunch of other work as well around, you know, digital rights management and all sorts of standards. But yes, it has been annoying not being able to use some headphones with others, or you have to use an adapter. But Nokia, I mean, this was a good example of one of the things they didn't have time to do first time round, because they're kind of getting everything off the shelf and trying to do it quickly. But there's lots of polishing that's gone on in bits of the hardware specification, and this is a great example. You'll be able to use either. You'll be able to use your old Nokia multimedia headsets, and it looks like it's got a certain amount of intelligence in it that will, you know, switch between one or the other. And it's actually to do with how the connectors work and where the banding are. If you look at a typical 3.5mm audio jack, it's got sort of different patterns on it. And the OMTP one is sort of having extra support, or supports the microphone in a certain way. And for AHJ, it's slightly different. But I know it's coming on the Nokia devices. I believe it's also coming on the HTC devices, but it is down to the manufacturer rather than the platform.
So there we go. Rafe, while we've got you in a talkative mood, what are you looking most forward to and liking about Windows Phone 8 then?
I think I'm just going to sort of have a bit of a cop-out and say it's the improved hardware requirements and the fact that you will get the higher resolution screens and the dual-core processors, you know, not just for the sake of being able to say I've got a dual-core processor, but you can just see some of the Windows Phone devices are a bit underpowered. They aren't measuring up to the competition. And you know, that was true, you know, even a year ago when we had Mango, you felt that all those handsets weren't quite up there in terms of top spec. Now, you know, okay, we haven't got quad core, and there are, you know, higher resolution screens. You know, HTC have just announced their J handset in Japan with a 1080p screen, but it's close enough and it's good enough, I would say. And so having that brought bang up to date is a really good thing. And also having things like NFC and other bits and pieces, you know, upgraded Bluetooth, all of those. And that kind of, I guess, ties in with what Steve was saying about micro SD card support as well, makes me feel like the basic specifications, leaving aside design and software considerations, mean the devices can be competitive. So it's kind of a basic requirement, and that's something I didn't feel was quite there last time round. So I'm really looking forward to it from that point of view. And some of those I would regard as absolutely essential for a modern high-end smartphone. And, you know, the screen, for example, the 720p resolution. If you're looking to get a top-end smartphone, that's a really important thing to have. Beyond that, maybe less important. You know, once you're over 330 DPI, pixels per inch, I should say, less important. But that's probably the thing I'm most looking forward to. The thing that's not there, I'm kind of still wondering a bit about notifications, because that's an interesting subject. I feel that, you know, both Android and particularly iOS have kind of bolted them on, and I was hoping Windows Phone would kind of do something interesting there with notifications. And I guess the Live Tiles do that, but there are certain notifications that I kind of miss and would like to be able to go back and find again. So particularly toast notifications, they're the ones that come in along the top of the screen and will disappear after a while. If I'm not looking at my phone or I'm away from my desk or something, I can miss those. It'd be nice to have a way to go back and get them. I mean, we may see something on that, but I haven't seen any commentary on that thus far. So, you know, in the same way that Microsoft innovated with the Live Tiles, you know, when they first launched Windows phones, I'd be really interested to see what they could do with notifications in general.
So there we go. I'm in the last position of this question, and I'm in the strange situation that nobody has actually stolen my answers. Yay! So firstly, what I'm most looking forward to? Angry Birds. but specifically, Angry Birds at the same time as everybody else on the planet gets Angry Birds. In actual fact, that was a cunning way for me to say I'm more interested in the middleware that's coming in, the fact that you have native code support, that you can allow all these different 3D gaming engines that can be used, which should make porting of applications much easier and faster, simpler to do much earlier in the process. Angry Birds is one of the obvious ones. Angry Birds Space, for example, promised, still not here. It's you know, it's like 2-3 Robio games behind now on the other platforms. So in actual fact, it's the native code support that I'm most looking forward to, even though I will never actually dabble with it myself. I will just play with the results. Things I would like to see, and it would probably need a little bit of a re-engineering, but the thing that I most miss from my Symbian devices, and specifically the E7, was the fact that the clock always stayed on the screen, even when it was in standby, because of the screen technology. I missed that. I miss it that when my phone is off, it's just a completely black screen, and I have to actually now physically press a button to turn the time on and see what's that. Yeah, I just really missed that, and I'd like it back. But that would mean having to change all the screen, the tech, and bring in the organic LEDs and start, you know, vats of farms of growing all this hunkly resolution screens and everything and getting rid of all the other ones. It's just, you know, it would be a brave new world, but I'm not quite sure that we're ready to change over all the screen tech.
Yeah, it does rather seem, Ewan, that there's that more and more handsets now are coming with IPS displays, which are basically an offshoot of LCD, and things like TFT, these sort of acronyms, other than Super AMOLED. Now, Super AMOLED and AMOLED displays, which can glow just the pixels that need to glow to make these wonderful always-on clocks, they are still around, but they're not quite dominating the way that we once thought they would a couple of years ago. So I'm fully with you. But I really would hope that Nokia, on devices like the 820, which has got an AMOLED screen, it actually put that feature back in, but I somehow doubt they'll put the effort in just for one or two models, but who knows?
So one or two models. They're going to be make more than one or two, handsets. Sorry.
With AMOLED
Yes.
Okay, so thank you to Paul for that question. Actually, it was Paul Stevenson, and he asked in the email, do we accept reader questions? And yes, absolutely we do. So if anyone's got any, please send them in, and we'll do our best to answer them. There is actually a second half to Paul's question, which we'll come back to hopefully next week. The other question we had, or rather a comment, it was from Nikos DeVos, who was talking about the screen reader and accessibility on Windows Phone. And this was the news we had a couple of weeks back, that there are going to be some extra accessibility options in Windows Phone 8, particularly around the high contrast screen and then increasing text size. And that's all good news for people who are, you know, vision impairments. But he said there's no screen reader like there is on Symbian, and that's absolutely right. And I think that's really something where Microsoft and Nokia have dropped the ball. It's probably down to Microsoft as much as anybody, because I'm not sure Nokia could develop an application even with their special access, because it's quite closely tied into the platform. And I would hope it's something that Microsoft would pay more attention. I think it's a really important market because there are a lot of people out there using screen readers on Symbian. A good evidence of this is the 15,000 downloads that the screen reader that Nokia announced for Symbian had in the first week or so. So a big potential market there. And yes, Nick, we agree absolutely. We would love to see a screen reader on Windows Phone. I think we'll just take one more question before we get on to our app picks, and we'll keep this very quick for each of the team. It's from James, and he asks, what Windows Phone 8 device do you have your eye on? So I guess this is the, which one do you want to use or which one do you want to purchase once they come out, once November rolls around? So Ewan, what about you?
The handset I am most looking forward to, it's the Nokia 820.
I thought you might say that.
It is. It's actually probably the Nokia 725, but we haven't heard about that one yet. So let's just start the rumors going just now. But it's the Nokia 20. Yes, everybody's going to go for the 920, but it takes pictures. It takes images, which means Steve will grab it from me if I manage to get a review of it first, because I'm rubbish at taking pictures. And it's too big. I mean, I had this with the Lumia 900. You know, the 4-inch screen felt a little bit big to me. And, you know, going to the next, you know, notch up with the 920, it's not something that I'm particularly looking forward to. And even though the 820 is the 4-inch screen, so it's bigger than the 800 that I'm still using, I just feel that the 820 is going to be better for me. We already know it's got the extra battery on it. It's got SD cards. I want to say extra battery. I mean, you can switch the battery out yourself. It's got the SD card support. It's got all the software running in there. It's got the same underlying specifications and everything. It's the 820 for me.
Okay, Steve, I think you're probably going to say 920 for the camera, but you might as well confirm it.
I'm also going to keep it short because I know we're running long, but yes. Although the 920 is going to drive me absolutely spare in terms of having sealed battery and sealed storage, etc., it's also got all the gadgets and it's got that wonderful, unique optical image stabilization for me to play with to my heart's content over Christmas. So yes, thank you very much. 920.
And how about you, David? I mean, I guess you're probably interested in the 922, but is there another handset that's going to caught your attention?
Well, you're absolutely right there. I do want the 920 for the same reasons as Steve. It's the all singing, all dancing flagship. But if I had to choose something else, I am a sucker for metallic design, so it would have to be the 80FS.
Okay, thank you, David. And like Steve and David, I do think the 920 is probably the high-end device that's going to attract the most interest. But I don't think people should forget the HTC 8X either. And if you're, you know, not so bothered about the camera, this might be the one to get, because when you're holding it in the hand, it does feel considerably lighter, mainly because it is, but it also feels a lot slimmer. It actually feels a lot slimmer than it really is. And yes, it does have the integrated battery and all of that, and it's a silly similar polycarbonate design, range of colors, which is, of course, a bit of commentary, but HTC have done a really nice job with this, so that's going to be well worth keeping an eye on. And I would be hard-pressed to choose between the two of them, if I'm honest, but I suspect it will be just the camera that edges the 920 for me. Ewan, I think we can move on to app picks, and we better keep this moving because we're starting to run very long on this week's podcast, but hopefully the audience doesn't mind. That's a good bit of feedback. If you want it short, if you want it long, let us know.
Yeah.
Over to you, Ewan.
Well, I don't know about you, Ray, but I like mine long. And we will have the weather and travel reports coming up right after this, so do bear with us. Coronation Street will follow after the news. My application picks, it's a simple one for me, and that kind of already hinted at the top of the show, so this is a nice bit of looping back as well, and that's Nokia's exclusive ESPN application. I've hacked it around a little bit to make sure that I have Major League Baseball as one of the live tiles on my screen. If you've got a UK handset, you don't actually get MLB as an option, you know, get NFL. So what you do is you set your region to America, restart your handset, put the MLB live tile on your home screen, and then you go back and make it a UK handset again, and you can keep up to date with everything that's happening in the lead up to the postseason and the World Series, with the Giants, the Cards, and the Tigers all still in play. That probably means nothing to anybody else. Steve, what app have you got for this month?
I'm going to give you a zero app suggestion by basically revoking one recommendation and giving you another. Last time I was on, I believe I recommended Active Wi-Fi, which is a utility that keeps the Wi-Fi active all the time. You don't have to wait that pesky 5 or 10 seconds while it reconnects every single time you turn the screen on. However, I have tested it on several Windows Phone handsets now, and although it works brilliantly for an hour or so, it completely and utterly drains the battery. So not a good idea to keep it on all the time. So I revoke my recommendation for that. And I'm going to suggest Amazing Weather, which is a lovely little amazing, as it sounds, weather utility. It's got everything from radar views to satellite views to forecasts. It's got animations. It's got videos. You name it, it's got it. And there'll be a review coming very shortly on allaboutwindowsphone.com. Plug, plug.
Steve, that means you're one app down because you revoked the one from the last show.
Don't worry, I'll pick
So you've got to do two next time, okay?
All right. Okay.
David, you've just got to give us one app pick. Go for it.
Mine is going to be the official PayPal application. We all use PayPal, whether we're just buying stuff on eBay or it's a convenient way to get paid for doing freelance work. It's just nice to be able to fire up an app and keep track of this sort of like side channel for you, for like sort of like slush fund finances. And it's got everything. It's as feature complete as the other platforms, as far as I can tell so far. And it's free to use, so that's my recommendation.
There we go. And finally, stopwatch is out. Rafe, no hesitation, repetition, deviation, 60 seconds to talk about my favourite app.
It's not necessarily my favourite app, but one that I think is worth a download for a bit of fun because it's free, is Gerbil Invasion, in which you see the critters falling from the sky on parachutes and you've got to catch them on a trampoline. Various power-ups and modes available, arcade, time attack and jumper. Bit of diverting fun for a few minutes. Download it from the Windows Phone Marketplace.
Oh, and there's hesitation there. So the timer stops, 45 seconds. Over to Giles to carry on that with our small Radio 4 tribute. So there we go. Actually, I have one more thing for all our listeners out there, which I should have said at the very start, which is if you email into us, Rafe, the email address is, of course...
Rafe@allaboutwindowsphone.com.
Okay, the person who gets the most correct cultural references I have made in this podcast will have an exclusive Nokia giveaway from me.
Ooh.
Okay, but you must get more than half of them.
It's a USB stick, isn't it?
It is a USB stick, David, yes, but I wasn't going to say that. I was going to try and build it up a little bit, but there we go. Just a little bit of fun. Email them in your comments for the podcast, the references, all of that back over to Rafe. We all see you at the team and everything. I'm Ewan Spence. What remains for me to say thank you to my three very special and knowledgeable guests, to Steve Litchfield.
Goodbye for now. I'll catch you maybe next month.
Next month, which is in 12 days. To David Gilson.
Thank you, Ewan, and I'll be here next time as well.
To the man who writes the paycheck every month, Mr. Rafe Blanford, KBELGBPSGSSD Star Wars.
If you say so. Yes, thanks everyone for listening. Don't forget to send your feedback in. You can use the same email address we just mentioned, rafe@allaboutwindowsphone.com.
If you're keeping track, that was a Star Wars reference, but you can only have it once, even though I said it twice. I'm Ewan Spence, and I just want to say thank you all out there for you to listen as well. All the news about Windows Phone, the resulting ecosystem, a little bit of fun. Hope it puts a smile on your face every week. We thank you very much for your company and your ears and your eyes on the website as well, www.allaboutwindowsphone.com. We shall catch you here, same podcast, same bat time next week. For now.